Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit with me, Kathy Brody of kathybrody.com. In this summit, we're exploring children's personal, social and emotional development, and especially strategies for helping children in this key area of development. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Julia Manning-Morton. Julia's career in the early childhood field has included roles as a practitioner, advisor and inspector across a range of settings for children aged 0 to 7 and as a senior lecturer in early childhood studies. For much of her career, Julia's particular interest and passion has been to support the development of children aged birth to 3, being part of the Birth to 3 project group. Her research and writing is focused on PSED, and she's particularly interested in working with teams and leaders to meet the emotional needs of babies and young children. Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit, Julia.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm very pleased to contribute.
I'm absolutely thrilled that I've managed to get the guru for Birth to 3. It's going to be fantastic. Today, we are going to focus on personal, social, emotional development. As I've said, that is one of your key areas of interest. So we're going to look at children aged from birth onwards. So take it right back to those very beginnings. So what is it that is particular about personal, social, emotional development and babies?
Well, can I just say first off what a huge area this is? And we're very used, aren't we, to saying PSED very quickly, and it being one area of learning in the English curriculum. But of course, it's three areas and it's massive in terms of ideas and thinking and practice. So I think we have to be very careful. I mean, A, we're not going to be able to squeeze everything into one discussion, but also it's very difficult, I think, in practice to squeeze it into one area of planning, for example. So I think that needs to be thought about. And the other thing is that it's a continuum. For me, social, emotional and personal development is lifelong. If you think about even how as adults we continue to learn about ourselves, we continue to learn about other people and social ways of doing things. So it's important for us to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. However, having said that, the foundations, those very important building blocks begin from the beginning, if not before birth, but certainly from birth. And those foundations can give children either a very positive start in life or a more challenging start in life. And I think that that is why, for me, this area of learning and development is hugely important, and that it's hugely important that we get it as right as we can for our babies, toddlers and two-year-olds. So when we think about the personal, social and emotional development of our youngest children, I think the key issue that we think about primarily is their physical and emotional dependency. This underpins this aspect of development. This dependency means that they experience their emotions, for example, really, really intensely.
Yes.
And express them very, very clearly through crying, screaming, whatever it might be. Mm. Now, this is really important because if they didn't do so, their survival might be endangered. This is an evolutionary skill that human beings have developed and is very, very necessary. Physical dependency also means that babies and very young children experience their emotions very physically. The physiological aspects of feelings are very strong. So feelings of hunger, coldness, discomfort are really, really important and can cause huge amounts of distress for very young children. But although they might communicate that very powerfully and let us know in no uncertain terms that there's something wrong, their distress is often very generalised. So it depends on the skill and intuition, the attunement of the adult to know what is wrong,
Yeah.
to try and work out what is wrong. A toddler who has a shoe that is rubbing and causing them discomfort might be really whingy, and it might be really not obvious
Yeah.
what the problem is.
Yeah.
And it's the adult's responsibility to actually think about what might be the issue and try to get underneath that and work it out. So this requires caring adults, practitioners, and parents to know these children very, very well, to
Yeah,
be able
yeah.
to know them intimately. The other reason that the emotions of babies and very young children are expressed very immediately and without any kind of mediation
Yes.
is because of the development of their brains. And at a very, very early age, emotions are being processed primarily through an older part of our brain, the limbic system, which is the part of our brain that processes our emergency emotions. So when when we perceive a threat of some kind, we go into the fight or flight mode. Everyone will have experienced that. Road rage is the classic example. And the expression of those emotions are not mediated by the prefrontal cortex of our thinking brain, where so and the connections in that part of our brain don't start to be made until about 6 months. They reach their fullest density at around 2.5, which might help to explain how much emotionality is going on at that particular age. And those connections are actually not completely, those neural pathways are not completely firmed up and fully developed until early adulthood.
Wow, really?
That's why, one of the reasons I say this is a very long-term development. It's when those connections are made in the prefrontal cortex that inner feelings, start to become understood and also gradually start to be able to be managed and regulated.
Yeah.
But how that happens, of course, depends on the experiences of the baby and young child and how their feelings and emotions are understood, accepted, mediated by the caring adult.
Yeah.
Clearly, as children grow older and become more autonomous and independent, and their understanding, cognitive understanding grows, their ability and their verbal and language communication skills grow, their ability to express their emotions and to therefore regulate their emotions becomes more sophisticated. But one of the things I like to emphasize about this is that being able to manage your feelings is not you either it's not that you either have it or you don't have it. It's situational. We all lose it sometimes. However kind of mature we think we are, given enough stress, enough fear, enough anxiety, we can lose control of our feelings and our emotions. So I think we have to remember that as adults, to try and help us remember that we experience that even when we're in control of most of our lives. Babies, toddlers, and 2-year-olds are not in control of what happens to them and their experiences. So I think we can understand how, those kinds of emotional collapses can happen more frequently for them as well as.
Yes, and the suddenness, of course, with which they come on when you're flooded with those emotions all of a sudden.
And of course, well, we'll come on to, I think, thinking about more about kind of the stress that young children experience. But if you can remember that young children experience stress sometimes in what might seem to us quite ordinary situations. Going to the doctors. yes, being in a noisy supermarket.
I remember
The
from my.
sensory overload, which when you're very young, your senses are much more acute than when you're older. So you are taking in, and your ability to filter out sensory information is much less. So you are being bombarded with sensory information, and that can lead to overload and meltdown, basically.
So we kind of start wired up with the flight or fight, as you say, that's for survival and evolutionary purposes. And then gradually, as babies grow into toddlers, they have all these emotions, all the outside sort of the world is now impinging on them, and they've got to deal with this in somehow. And you've already touched on that, it's got to be sensitive practitioners and parents that understand and really know their children. But what are the implications if we don't? What happens if personal, social, emotional development is neglected during that critical sort of first few years?
I think there's a lot of research that shows that the first, certainly the first 3 years, and some neuroscientists would perhaps suggest the first 6 years of life,
Really?
particularly sensitive for learning about yourself, other people, your feelings, and how to regulate them. And young children learn about these things in their close relationships adults. And of course, central to this is the close attachment relationships that they make with their primary carers, or the very few close members of their family in the first instance, and then possibly later their key person in their early years setting. Now, the optimum experience for a young child is one in which that close carer enables them to make an attachment with them through their sensitive, responsive interactions. So those nurturing interactions. And that means being what Daniel Siegel calls being attuned. We might say just being tuned in, but attunement is whereby the adult aligns their state of mind with the state of mind of the child and mirrors it back. So you have a hungry, crying baby, and you're gently holding, you physically hold, and you mentally hold. And this also relates to Wilfred Bion's theory of container contained. Okay, so these are psychodynamic theories. So we hold the child in our minds, and we kind of take in their feelings, and we say, "Oh, it's okay. Well, you know you're hungry, but your food's coming soon. I'm just doing the bottle, and we'll be here very soon." And we use a very soothing tone of voice, and we use gentle touch. And through that, the baby starts to experience that this distress, this really frightening distress, is being managed by somebody else. And that somebody else gives it back to them in a manageable way. So the child absorbs this idea that, yes, this feels horrible at the moment, but I hear this soothing and I feel this soothing, and then I actually intake the soothing through the bottle or the breast or whatever it is, or the spoon. And the child learns from that that distress doesn't last forever, and gradually becomes able to manage their distress themselves because they had a model of how that works. Now, that is an attuned adult who takes on and takes in the child's feelings. But of course, that doesn't always happen. So children can have psychologically unhealthy interactions with their key adults as well. Misattuned interactions, adults who are self-attuned absorbed and concerned about their own issues.
Yeah.
Adults who, through depression perhaps, aren't able to take in the child's feelings. So those kinds of, in those situations, the baby and young child doesn't get their feelings acknowledged and
Yeah.
to. And those kind of interactions can lead to insecure attachment relationships. The child will still feel attached to their carer, but they will have le be learning in that relationship that they can't expect anything from much from someone else. And so they have to either, so those children either become very, I can only look after myself, I don't need anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's called an avoidant attachment relationship. Or perhaps they cling even more and desperately can't let go because if you go, I won't know what's going to happen next. So one of the things we know is that children who have chronic and repeated experiences like that, and I have to emphasize this is repeated experiences, it's not someone having an off day. You know, every parent has an off day or several. But generally the child has responsive interactions. Those children have who have generally a secure, trusting relationship can get over an off day. So it's just a blip. And they might get stressed, but they come down from the stress. The children who have repeated, neglectful, perhaps abusive relationships, their brains are always in fight or fight mode. Their stress levels are so high. So they're always on red alert. Okay, or a lot on red alert. And their levels of anxiety and stress means that their learning is impaired, basically. And we all know we can't think when we're distressed.
Absolutely.
The ability to think is really impaired in this situation. Like, however, having and of course we know that there are very negative outcomes for a lot of those children. Okay, in terms of their later learning, in terms of their ability to have positive relationships with other people, etc., etc. However, having said that, it's not a good, bad, all or nothing situation. There are plenty of us working, plenty of us out there walking around, leading, and I include myself in this, leading generally positive lives, generally successful lives in all kinds of ways, who may have an element of an insecure attachment pattern in the way we think about relationships. And the research seems to show that there are some children who, despite a very poor early start and those negative relationships, do seem to manage to make some kind of success of their lives and their relationships. And I'm talking about success here, not about earning lots of money. I'm talking about being able to feel okay about yourself, have positive relationships, etc. Now, the research seems to show that those children, somewhere in their lives, hopefully in their earliest lives, have had an adult who has believed in them, trusted them, and supported them, has given them that positive feedback, has offered them, if you like, an alternative model to relationships to the one that they learnt in their families. Bowlby talks about, a mental model, a blueprint in our minds of relationships, and that it's that blueprint that children take into their future relationships with other people. So what we have to remember in practice, of course, is that children come into our settings with a model in their minds of how relationships work already. And where children have had negative models, they will expect you as a practitioner, they will try and recreate that relationship.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So, you know, that is one of the huge skills of early childhood practitioners, to be able to recognize and offer an alternative model relating and relationships to our youngest children, so that they can perhaps see, oh right, it doesn't have to be like this.
Yeah.
Actually, when I make a mistake, I don't always get shouted at.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I can, it's not quite as devastating to make a mistake, so therefore perhaps I can take a few chances in my learning.
Yeah.
So that is what we call resilience.
Right.
Okay, resilience doesn't mean being hardened and not caring. Resilience means being able to bounce back from mistakes, and to have a generally positive kind of view of challenges and being able to get over them. And when you set back, being able to get over a setback. So I think that this is really important for early childhood practitioners to understand, because they have the opportunity to offer children who have very negative models of relationships, to offer a positive or an alternative model, which hopefully will give children the resilience to survive what otherwise might be very difficult early experiences.
Yeah. And I think that bounce back ability, as you say, is vital. It's a vital life skill. That's not just for the sort of birth to three, is it? That's throughout life.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that's really interesting, the idea that as practitioners we can give children those models, we can demonstrate that, we can obviously model that for them, we can support them when things do go wrong, as you say, that they are allowed to make mistakes and not be penalised for that. What are the sort of strategies and what other sorts of things can practitioners be doing to support the very youngest children in our settings?
Okay. Well, first of all, the issue of attunement needs to be understood by practitioners. And attunement is where you tune in, basically, but not just to what you see on the outside, but what you understand to be going on emotionally, internally for children, and how you kind of hold that for the child. So you take it in for the child, and you process it and give it back to the child in a way that is manageable for the child. So we talk to children, don't we? We say, oh my goodness, you really must be uncomfortable in that pooey nappy. Let's go and take it off and make you all nice and comfortable again, and then we can play. And yes, you take the distress and the discomfort, and you translate it into something that's manageable for the child. And in that way, the child feels held by you physically, but also mentally. They feel held in mind, and we do that with children all the time. Hopefully. So that attunement is very, very important.
So I think that's slightly different to what I would call tuning in that tuning in for me is very much understanding what the child's interest might be, kind of knowing the context. But as you say, the attunement is then putting that into something manageable and handing it back and saying, it's okay, I've got you here. It's almost got an element of empathy in there as well, hasn't it?
Oh, it's about empathy. I mean, Dan, and technically it's affect attunement, so it is that emotional tuning in. And it's so about taking in the child's feelings and holding them. This is called containment, so holding them and then giving them back to the child in a manageable way.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
in a way that the child can think about, and by you thinking about the child's feelings, you're helping the child to think about their feelings
Yeah.
and therefore process them and make them manageable.
Yeah, so that sort of idea of rather than a 2-year-old having a temper tantrum, this is a distressed child. And when you kind of think, if I was distressed, I wouldn't want to be saying, oh, you're just having a tantrum.
No, exactly. No. I mean, I call them emotional collapses.
Right, yes.
When everything just gets too much, and my brain can't even process this anymore, so I have to fall on the floor.
Yeah.
That physical collapse that goes with the emotional collapse is really, really, it gives us a message. It means like everything's gone
Yeah,
here.
yeah, yeah.
Control of my ability to hold my body, even.
Yeah.
So now, some of this sometimes might be a learned behavior to get what you want.
Yeah.
But to condemn a child for that, to blame a child for that, is not helpful. Because if a child has learnt that way of that quite extreme way of trying to get their own way,
Yeah.
then how sad is that?
Yeah. And
That
as you
they're
say, it's
not
understood.
able to express that in another way.
Yeah.
But most emotional collapses aren't just about getting what you want. Most emotional collapses are about overload and just not being able to hack it anymore.
Yeah.
And just falling apart. It's sometimes called like a fragmentation of the self.
Wow, yeah.
Lose we talk about losing it, don't we? And actually what we're losing there often is ourselves, or children are losing their selves, their sense of cohesiveness.
Yeah. Well, if you think about if you translate that into an adult situation, you can suddenly see why that's such a major event for a child. And just to sort of, oh, get up off the floor, you're okay. That's really not helpful then, is
Not
it,
really. Not really.
really? Not when you view it through that perspective. So that's really interesting. So attunement is so important, having that empathy and holding the children in mind, which I just love. I love that visual image of just that containment and holding of children. So thinking particularly about practitioners that are working in the baby room, that are working with babies all the time, maybe, or childminders who maybe have one or more babies in their care. What would your top tip be for those people who are working with those babies, with those very young children?
Oh my goodness. Have books that talk about this. I think my top tip would be to learn as much as you can about why and how these children grow and develop and behave as they do. Because, knowledge is strength.
Yeah.
And the more you understand, the more you're able to process for yourself those issues through your mind. And if you're processing those issues through your mind, you're also being the container, the holder of the child's
Yeah.
ability to process those things through their mind. So that's key. But to be able to do that, you need an environment in which you can think stuff through.
Right.
You need hopefully someone you can talk to about what's happening in a supportive and knowledgeable way. Proper support and supervision for practitioners who work in groups is really key. And for childminders, some kind of forum where they can share their
Yeah.
and thoughts and feelings is really, really helpful if possible.
So let's explore working in teams a little bit further, because My feeling is that sometimes practitioners in the baby room do feel a little bit isolated, or maybe if you're a childminder and you're working with very young babies, but maybe none of your colleagues are. How can that sort of team working, how can that support children's personal, social, emotional development?
Okay, so that's such a huge question. Because what we're talking about here is the psychodynamic theory of containment, container contained, and that's what the adult mind does for the child. Hold the child in mind. You process their distress, their excitement, their interest, their self through your mind, and you give it back to them in manageable ways. So you say, oh, you are hungry, aren't you? Let's get you your bottle straight away. Oh, wow, you're really excited by that. I can see it's because. And so we process that for children and we give it back to them in a manageable way. Practitioners almost need the same kind of thing. They need a forum or a place where they can think their practice through. They can say, I'm exhausted. Yeah. I've had three babies crying all morning. Yeah. And they need for somebody to really hold that for them and talk them through it. Not saying, oh, what's the matter with you? You know, can't you hack it?
Yeah.
kind of thing. So opportunities for reflection and, you know, support and supervision is key for practitioners. Working with all children, but I think particularly working with our youngest children, if they're really going to be able to free up their emotional minds to the children, because what happens is that because the stress of working with very young children builds up and up, and if it has no containing, no support or no outlet, then what practitioners do is cut off.
Yeah.
Because to preserve yourself, you can't keep taking in all this because it's a very highly emotional process.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you don't have a forum in which you can think about that and process some of that, then it gets too much and you tend to start shutting it off.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, as a practitioner, you can stop noticing what's going on for children. You can stop responding as well as you might
to
what's going on for a young child. Because it's too much. It just gets too much. You know, your emotional jug is up here.
Yeah.
So I often use this image of a jug. And, you know, in it is coming all this stuff from the children. And we are, you know, giving out, well, actually, no, we are giving out from our jugs all the time.
Yeah.
To support children, our parents, our colleagues. You know, what we need is positive stuff that goes into the jug to refill it. To keep it well stocked. The emotional jug needs to be well stocked. So practitioners do need opportunities to really think about what's going on, what's really going on with the toddlers, how they're managing to respond or what's difficult, how they're managing in that triangular relationship that is so important with parents and children.
Yeah.
You know, it is a triangular relationship and the sides of the triangle need to be equally considered.
And so, I mean, when you're talking about supervision and forms, we're not talking about formally going in and sitting with the manager and having it written down and sign here and that'll go in the folder. You're talking, I'm thinking that you're talking about something much more emotionally supportive and being able to just offload sometimes and say, you know what, it's been awful this morning. I don't think I've been there as much as I could have been, or just to have that emotional unload, is it? Am I right there?
It is. It certainly isn't appraisal. It's certainly not about just ticking boxes of have you done this, that, or the other. But equally, it's not just sitting and moaning.
Yes,
You know, it's
yes.
just not just offloading. Something constructive has to come out of that. So it's about exploring what's going on and why you think it might be going on, and therefore what you might do about it.
Yes,
And the
yes.
process of that is helpful in itself, but there is also a practical, pragmatic aspect of it, because it needs to give you something to go back into your practice. You know, it's not just about just offloading or a moaning shop. It's about thinking very creatively and concretely about what you can do in a particular scenario as well. Yeah, so it's fundamental, really, to what I call an emotionally intelligent practice.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you're going to be a key person, and let's agree, we haven't even talked about it, but
Know,
the key
yeah.
person approach is obviously fundamental
Yes.
to any kind of, you know, positive practice happening with our youngest children. Yeah, so if you're going to be a key person and you're going to be able to respond in an emotionally accessible and open and thoughtful way to young children, you need a forum where you can explore those interpersonal and intrapersonal of your practice with somebody who is knowledgeable, understands, and can support you in that. And so that cycle then can bring you round into being able to respond positively and provide well for the children. So having those opportunities, practitioners who work with very young children, is really, really important. And that means developing, you know, in teams, it means developing a vision of practice that incorporates that those emotional dimensions,
Yes, yeah.
and that acknowledges that reflecting on those issues is important, and that you're not somehow less than or not such a good practitioner because you open up about finding something difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very interesting when you do university courses or as yourself teaching on courses as well, and you sometimes find that sharing community on the course happens as well. You see the practitioners sharing and discussing those ideas. And of course, for some of them, it'll be the first time they've come across reflective diaries and formally reflecting rather than just having a think on the way home. They're formally reflecting on their practice, so.
Absolutely. But what's key about that is that there is some kind of structure to it, and perhaps a more experienced other, you
Yes.
know, who can hold or contain the thinking and feeling to move it on to something that's useful. You know, just a moaning shop isn't useful. It
No.
just goes round and round and round and round. You know, it needs to be processed in a way that's going to be helpful, and to go back into practice. I mean, this is our aim, to go
Yes.
back into making, you know, the experiences of our babies, toddlers, and 2-year-olds really positive. That's what is key.
Absolutely.
So if we accept that our youngest children, you know, that need, you know, positive relationships, positive experiences of close relationships in their early lives, because within that, from that comes their positive sense of who they are, and their positive abilities to relate and to others and understand others. And for me, this is fundamental. You can be, you know, well developed in another area, maybe, you know, cognitively, you know, in terms of something or other. But for me, real success in life and I'm kind of quoting Daniel Goleman here in Emotional Intelligence. Real success in life is about being able to know yourself, understand yourself, being able to understand others, and hold down mostly positive relationships with other people. It's what makes the world go round, as far as I'm concerned. And if you
Absolutely.
have those skills, then the other skills, the cognitive skills, the linguistic skills, etc., hopefully come that little bit more easily.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really nice positive message to end on there, I think, Julia. I know that you're currently running the Key Times Level 4 Certificate in Development Practice and Provision, and that is specifically for birth to 3-year-olds.
Yes.
And that started in April, and that's with early education.
Yes.
And I was very excited to find out that you're actually writing a book on personal social emotional development for early education,
Yeah.
which is due out in a few months' time. So I'm really, really excited about that. I'll be looking out for that. I already use the 2-year-old book loads. That's on my shelf upstairs already. But that the level 4 is part of a suite of courses, and you do a level 7 in birth to 3. Have I got that right?
Level 7 is not totally focused on birth to 3, although it's mainly focused on PSED, but with a very much an emphasis on the very earliest years, because so much importance happens in this area at that time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a level. I do have a level 7 course accredited in that as well. So yeah.
That's really exciting. So if there are people working out there with babies who want to find out more, who want to take their development that bit further, I just think that would be a great thing to jump onto there. Yeah. And of course you'll be doing.
On my website.
And that's on your website, which is www.key-times.co.uk, and you'll find that link on the side of the video here, so you can click straight through to that as well. And I know that you'll be doing the Hackney Conference as usual in your local area, and there's Saturday morning ones for childminders there as well. So if you are in that area and you're a childminder, do get yourself down to the Hackney Conference, which is about emotional well-being this year. So that's a nice little link there. Julia, absolutely fascinating. I'm so pleased that you agreed to join us today, because birth to three doesn't get enough coverage, and to come to the expert was just been amazing. So thank you so much for
But this much.
that. Yes, well,
Really, this much of this much.
I like to think of it as an aperitif. It's just that appetizer ready for people to go and find out more about it.
Absolutely. Please do. It's really, really important.
Absolutely vital. Thank you so much, Julia Manning-Morton, for joining us today on the Early Years Web Summit.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to our viewers and listeners today for joining us on the summit.